Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David. This is the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, that is at the 11th hour. In the evangelicals, today is May the 11th, 2025, or it's the 15th day of this, 2029. We start our second service today for the continuation on Joseph in Egypt. We're on Patriarchs and Prophets. We're on chapter 20. We're on page 313. This is meanwhile, Joseph, with his captives, was on the way to Egypt. As the caravan journeyed southward toward the border of the Canaan, the boy could discern in the distance the hills among which lay his father's tents. Bitterly he wept at the thought of that having his loving father in his loneliness and affliction. Again, the scene at the dothan came up before him, for he saw his hungry brothers and felt their fierce glances bent upon him, for the stinging, insulting words that had met his agonized entreaties were ringing in his ears. With a trembling heart, he looked forward unto the future. What a change in the situation from the tenderly cherished son unto the despised and helpless slave, alone and friendless. What would be his lot in the strange land under which he was going? For a time, Joseph gave himself up to the uncontrolled grief and terror. But in the providence of Yahweh, even this experience was to be a blessing unto him. He had learned in a few hours that which years might not otherwise have taught him. For his father, strong and tender as his love had been, had done him wrong by his partiality and indulgence. For this unwise preference had angered his brother and provoked him to the cruel deed that had separated him from his home. For his effects were manifest also in his own character. For the faults had been encouraged that were now to be corrected. He is becoming self-sufficient and exacting, accustomed unto the tenderness of his father's care. He felt that he was unprepared to cope with the difficulties before him. In the bitter, uncared for life of a stranger and a slave, then his thoughts turned to his father Yahweh. In his childhood, he had been taught to love and fear him. Often in his father's tent, he had hastened to the story of the vision that the Jacob saw as he fled from his home, an exile and a fugitive, for he had been told of the Yahweh's promise unto Jacob and how they had been fulfilled, how in the hour of the need the angels of Yahweh had come to instruct, comfort, and protect him. and he had learned of the law of Yahweh and the providing for the men of the Redeemer. Now all these precious lessons came vividly before him, for Joseph believed that the Yahweh of his fathers would be his Yahweh. He then and there gave himself fully to the Yahweh, and he prayed that the keeper of Israel would be with him in the land of his exile. His soul thrilled with a high resolve to prove himself true unto Yahweh, under all circumstances, to act as became a subject of the King of Heaven. He would serve the Yahweh with the undivided heart. He would meet the trials of his lot with fortitude and perform every duty with a fidelity. One day's experience had been the turning point in Joseph's life. This terrible calamity had transformed him from a petty child to a man thoughtful, courageous, and self-possessed. Arriving in Egypt, Joseph was sold to Potiphar, captain of the king's guard, in whose service he remained for 10 years. He was here exposed to temptations of no ordinary character. He was in the midst of idolatry, the worship of the false gods, was surrounded by all the pomp of the royalty and supported by the wealth and culture of the most highly civilized nation then in existence. Yet Joseph preserved his simplicity and his fidelity to Yahweh, for the sights and sounds of the vice were all about him, but he was as the one who saw and heard not. His thoughts were not permitted to linger upon the forbidden subject, the desire for the gaining of the favor of the Egyptian could not cause him to conceal his principles. Had he attempted to do this, he would have been overcome by the temptation, but he was not ashamed of the religion of his father, and he made no effort to hide the fact that he was a worshiper of the Yahweh. Okay, part two, it says, and the Yahweh was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and his master saw that the Yahweh was with him, and that the Yahweh made all that he did to prosper in his hand, for the Potiphar's confidence in Joseph increased daily, and he finally promoted him to his steward. It says, with the full control over all of his possessions, and he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not all he had save the bread which he did eat, for the marked prosperity which attended everything placed under the Joseph's care was not the result of a direct miracle, but his industry, care and energy were crowned with the divine blessing. For the Joseph attributed his success to the favor of the Yahweh, and even his idolatrous master accepted this as the secret of this unparalleled prosperity. Without the steadfast, well-directed effort, however, a success that could never have been attained. For Yahweh was glorified by the faithfulness of his servant. It was his purpose that impurity and uprightness, that the believers in the Yahweh should appear in the marked contrast to the worshippers of the idols, that thus the light of the heavenly grace might shine forth amid the darkness of the heathenism. For the joys of gentleness and fidelity won the heart of the chief captain, who came to regard him as a son rather than as a slave. For the year was brought in time and attacked with the men of rank and learning, and he acquired a knowledge of the science, of the languages, and of the affairs, and education needful for the future prime minister of Egypt. But Joseph's faith and integrity were to be tested by the fiery trials, for his master's wife endeavored to entice the young man to transgress the law of Yahweh. Heretofore, he had remained untainted by the corruption teeming in that heathen land, but this temptation so sudden, so strong, so seductive, how should it be met? For the judgment knew well what would be the consequence of the resistance. On the one hand, concealment, favor, and rewards. On the other, disgrace, imprisonment, perhaps death, his whole future life depended upon the decision of the moment. With the principle triumph, would the Joseph still be true unto Yahweh? With the inexpressible anxiety, angels looked up on the scene. For the Joseph answered, reveals the power of the religious principle, for he would not betray the confidence of his master on earth, and whatever the consequences, he would be true to his master in heaven. Under the impending eye of the Yahweh and holy angels, many take liberties of which they would not be guilty in the presence of their fellow men. But Joseph's best thought was of Yahweh. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against Yahweh, he said. If we were to cherish an habitual impression that the Yahweh sees and hears all that we do and say and keeps a faithful record of our words and actions, and that we must meet it all, we would fear to sin. Let the young ever remember that wherever they are and whatever they do, they are in the presence of the Yahweh. No part of our conduct escapes observation. We cannot hide our ways from the Most High. Human love, though sometimes severe or often transgressed without the detection and hence with the impure virginity, but not so with the law of Yahweh. But the deepest midnight is no cover for the guilty one, for he may think himself alone, but every deed there is an unseen witness for the very motives of his heart are open unto the divine inspection. Every act, every word, every thought is distinctly marked as though there were only one person in the whole world, and the attention of the heaven were centered upon him. Joseph suffered for his integrity, for his tempter revenged himself or herself by the accusing him of a foul crime and causing him to be thrust into prison. Had the Potiphar believed his wife's charge against Joseph, the young Hebrew would have lost his life. But the modesty and uprightness that had uniformly characterized his conduct were proof of his innocence. And yet, to save the reputation of his master's house, he was abandoned to disgrace and bondage. At the first, Joseph was treated with a great severity by his jailers, for the psalmist said, his feet they hurt with the fetters. He was laid in chains of iron until the time that his word came to pass, the word of the Yahweh tried him. But Joseph's real character shines out even in the darkness of the dungeon. He held his faith. He held fast unto his faith and patience, for his years as a faithful servant had been most cruelly repaid. Yet this did not render him morose or distrustful. He had the peace that comes from the conscious innocence, and he trusted his case with Yahweh. He did not brood upon his own wrongs, but forgot his sorrow in the trying to lighten the sorrows of the others. He found a work to do, even in the prison. Yahweh was preparing him in the school of the affliction for the greater usefulness. And he did not refuse the needful discipline. In the prison, witnessing the result of the oppression and tyranny and the effects of the crime, he learned lessons of the justice, sympathy, and mercy that prepared him to exercise power with the wisdom and compassion. Joseph gradually gained the confidence of the keeper of the prison and was finally entrusted with the charge of all the prisoners. It was the part he acted in the prison with the integrity of his daily life and his sympathy for those who were in trouble and distress that opened the way for his future prosperity and honor. Every ray of the light that we shed upon others is reflected upon ourselves. Every kind and sympathizing word spoken for the sorrowful, every act for the relieving of the oppressed, and every gift of for the needy, if prompted by a right motive, will result in the blessings to the giver. For the chief baker and chief butler of the king had been cast into prison for some offense, and they came under the Joseph's charge. One morning, observing that they appeared very sad, he kindly inquired the cause, and was told that each had had a remarkable dream of which they were anxious to learn the significance. "Do not interpretations belong unto Yahweh," said the Joseph. "Tell me them, I pray you." As each related his dream, Joseph made known of its import. In 3 days, the butler was to be reinstated in his position and give the cup under Pharaoh's hand as before. But the chief baker would be put to death by the king's command. In both cases, the event occurred as foretold. For the king's cupbearer had professed the deepest gratitude to the Joseph, both for the cheering interpretations of his dream and for the many acts of kind attention, and in return, the latter referring in a most touching manner to his own unjust captivity and entreated that his case be brought before the king. Think on me, he said, when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house, for indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. For the chief butler saw the dream fulfilled in every particular, but when restored to the royal favor, he sought no more of his benefactor. For the 2 years longer, Joseph remained as a prisoner, for the hope that had been kindled in his heart gradually died out, and unto all other trials were added the bitter sting of the ingratitude. But a divine hand was about to open the prison gates. The king of the Egypt had in one night two dreams, apparently pointing to the same event and seeming to foreshadow some great calamity. He could not determine the significance, yet they continued to trouble his mind. The magicians and wise men of his realm could give no interpretation, for the king's perplexity and distress increased, and terror spread throughout his palace. The general agitation recalled to the chief butler's mind the dream, or the circumstances of his own dream. With it came the memory of Joseph, and a pang of remorse for his forgetfulness and ingratitude. He at once informed the king how his old dream and that of the chief baker had been interpreted by a Hebrew captive, but how the predictions had been fulfilled. It was humiliating under Pharaoh to turn away from the magicians and wise men of his kingdom for the consulting an alien and a slave. But he was ready to accept the lowest or the lowliest service if his troubled mind might find relief, for the Joseph was immediately sent for. He put off his prison attire and shaved himself, for his hair had grown long during the period of his disgrace and confinement. He was then conducted to the presence of the king. The Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me, for the Yahweh shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Joseph replied to the king, reveals his humility and his faith in the Yahweh. And he modestly disclaimed the honor of possessing and himself superior wisdom. It is not in me, but Yahweh alone can explain these mysteries. Pharaoh then proceeded to relate his dreams. Behold, I stood upon the bank of the river, and behold, there came up out of the river seven kine, fat-fleshed and well-favored. And they fed in a meadow, and behold, seven other kine came up after them, poor and very ill-favored and lean-fleshed, such as I've never saw in all the land of Egypt for badness. And the lean and the ill-favored kine did eat up the first seven fat kine, and when they had eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them. But they were still ill-favored as at the beginning, so I awoke. And I saw in my dream, and behold, seven ears came up in one stalk, a full and good. And behold, seven ears withered thin and blasted with the east wind sprung up after them. And the thin ears devoured the seven good ears. And I told this unto the magicians, that there was none that should declare it unto me. For the dream of the Pharaoh is one, said the Joseph. Yet for Yahweh has showed the Pharaoh what he is about to do. There were to be 7 years of the great famine. Field and garden would yield more abundantly than ever before. And that period was to be followed by 7 years of famine, and the famine shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. For the repetition of the dream was evidence both of the certainty and nearness of the fulfillment. Now therefore, he continued, let the Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, set him over the land of Egypt. Let the Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the 70th year, and let them gather all the food of those good years that come and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities, and that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine. For the interpretation was so reasonable and consistent, the policy which it recommended was so sound and shrewd, that its correctness could not be doubted. But who was to be entrusted with the execution of the plan? Upon the wisdom of this choice depended the nation and preservation, for the king was troubled. For some time the matter of the opponent was under consideration. She's the chief butler, the monarch had learned the wisdom and purpose displayed by the Joseph in the management of the prison. It was evident that he possessed administrative ability and a preeminent degree, and the cupbearer now fell with the self reproach endeavored to atone for his former ingratitude. Now the warmest praise of his benefactor had further inquired by the king proved the correctness of his report. And all the realm, Joseph was the only man gifted with the wisdom to point out the danger that threatened the kingdom and the preparation necessary for the meeting it. And the king was convinced that he was the one best qualified to execute the plans which he had proposed. It was evident that a divine power was with him, and that there were none among the king's officers of the state so well qualified to conduct the affairs of the nation at this crisis, for the fact that he was a Hebrew and a slave was of the little moment when weighed against his evident wisdom and sound judgment. Can we find such a word as this is a man in whom the Spirit of Yahweh is, said the king to his counselors, for the opponent was decided upon at Joseph, the astonishing pronouncement was made. For as much as the Yahweh has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. For the king proceeded to invest Joseph with the insignia of his high office, and Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in the vestures of the fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck, and he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. As they cried before him, bow the knee, he made him a Lord of his house and ruler of all his substance, to bind his princes at his pleasure and teach his senators wisdom. From the dungeon, Joseph was exalted to be the ruler over all the land of Egypt. It was a position of the high honor. Yet it was beset with the difficulty and peril. One cannot stand upon a lofty height without the danger. As a tempest leaves unharmed the lowly flower of the valley, while it uproots the stately tree upon the mountaintop, so those who have maintained their integrity and the humble love may be dragged down to the pit by the temptation that assails worldly success and honor. But the Joseph's character bore the test alike of the adversity and prosperity. For the same fidelity unto Yahweh was manifested when he stood in the palace of the Pharaoh, yes, when in a prisoner cell, he was still a stranger in a heathen land, separated from his kindred, the worshippers of the Yahweh, but he truly believed that the divine hand had directed his steps, and in the constant reliance upon Yahweh, he faithfully discharged the duties of his position. Through the Joseph, the attempts of the king and great men of the Egypt was directed to the true Yahweh. And though they adhered to their idolatry, they learned to respect the principles revealed in the life and character of the worshiper of the Yahweh. How was the Joseph enabled to make such a record of the firmness of the character, uprightness and without and wisdom? In his early years, he had consulted duty rather than inclination, and the integrity, the simple trust, the noble nature of the youth bore fruit in the deeds of the man, and a pure and simple life had favored the vigorous development of the both physical and intellectual powers. For the communion with the Yahweh through his work and the contemplation of the grand truth entrusted to the inheritors of the faith has elevated and ennobled his spiritual nature, broadening and strengthening the mind as no other study could do. Faithful attention to duty in every station, from the lowliest to the most exalted, had been training every power for its highest service. He who lives in accordance with the Creator's will is securing to himself the truest and noblest development of the church. For the fear of the Yahweh, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. There are few who realize the influence of the little things of the life upon the development of the character. Nothing with which we have to do is really small, for the very circumstances that we meet day by day are designed to test our faithfulness and to qualify us for the greater trust. By the adherence unto the principle and the transactions of an ordinary life, the mind becomes accustomed for the holding of the claims of the duty above those of the pleasure and inclination. For the minds thus disciplined are not wavering between right and wrong, like the reed trembling in the wind, for they are loyal unto duty because they have trained themselves through the habits of the fidelity and truth. By the faithfulness in that which is least, they acquire strength to be faithful and their greater matters. As upright character is of the greater worth than the gold of the Ophir, without it none can rise unto an honorable eminence. But the character is not inherited. It cannot be bought. Moral excellence and fine mental qualities are not the result of the accident, for the most precious gifts are of the value unless they are improved. Let's do that again. For the most precious gifts are of no value until they are improved. For the formation of a noble character is the work of a lifetime and must be the result of a diligent and persevering effort. Yahweh gives opportunity. Such success depends upon the use made of them. This brings into chapter 20. Chapter 21, Joseph and his brothers. Let us continue. At the very opening of the fruitful years began the preparation for the approaching famine. With the direction of the Joseph, immense storehouses were erected in all of the principal places throughout the land of Egypt. And ample arrangements were made for the preserving of the surplus of the expected harvest. For the same policy was continued during the 7 years of plenty, until the amount of grain laid in store was beyond computation. And now the 7 years of the dearth began to come according unto the Joseph's prediction, and the dearth was in all lands. But in all the land of Egypt there was bread, and when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried unto Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, Go unto Joseph, what he saith unto you do. And the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians, for the famine extended into the land of Canaan and was severely felt in that part of the country where the Jacob dwelt, heard of the abundant provisions made by the king of Egypt. 10 of the Jacob's sons journeyed thither to purchase bread. On their arrival, they were directed to the king's deputy, and with other applicants, they came to present themselves before the ruler of the land, and they bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. For Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew not him. His Hebrew name had been exchanged for the one bestowed upon him by the king, and there was little resemblance between the prime minister of Egypt and the stripping whom they had sold unto the Ishmaelites. Having Joseph saw his brothers stooping and making obeisance, his dreams that came to his mind, and the scene of the past rose vividly before him. His keen eyes surveying the group, discovered that Benjamin was not among them. Had he also fallen a victim unto the treacherous cruelty of those savage men? He determined to learn the truth. "You are spies," he said sternly, "to see the nakedness of the land. You are come." They answered, "Nay, my master, Lord, let the thy food or thy servant come. We are all one man's son. We are true men. Thy servants are no spies." He wished to learn if they possessed the same hearty spirit as when he was with them, and also to draw from them some information in the regard to their home. Yet he well knew how deceptive their statements might be, for he repeated their charge, and he replied, "Thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not." Professing to doubt the truthfulness of their story, and to still look upon them as spies, the governor declared that he would prove them, rather requiring them to remain in Egypt till one of their number should go and bring their youngest brother down. If they would not consent to this, they were to be treated as spies. But to such an arrangement, the sons of Jacob could not agree, since the time required for carrying it out would cause their families to suffer for food, and who among them would undertake the journey alone, leaving his brothers in the prison? How could he meet his father under such circumstances? It appeared probable that they were to be put to death or to be made slaves. And if Benjamin were brought, it might be only to share their fate, for they decided to remain and suffer together rather than bring additional sorrow upon their father by the loss of his only remaining son. For they were accordingly cast into prison, where they remained 3 days. During the years since Joseph had been separated from his brothers, these sons of Jacob had changed in themselves. Envious, turbulent, deceptive, cruel, and revengeful they had been. But now, when tested by the adversity, they were shown to be unselfish, true to one another, devoted to their father and themselves, middle-aged men subject to his authority. For the 3 days in the Egyptian prison were the days of bitter sorrow as the brothers reflected upon their past sins. unless Benjamin should be produced, their convictions as spies appeared as certain, and they had little hope of gaining their father's consent to Benjamin's absence. On the third day, Joseph caused the brothers to be brought before him. He dared not detain them longer. Already his father and the families with him might be suffering for the food. Let's do and live, he said, for I fear the Yahweh. If you be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses. But bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and you shall not die. This proposition they agreed to accept, though expressing little hope that their father would let Benjamin return with them. Joseph had communicated with them through an interpreter, and having no thought that the governor understood them, they conversed freely with one another in his presence, for they accused themselves in regard to their treatment of Joseph. We are very guilty concerning our brother, and that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would and not here. Therefore is this distress come upon us. For the Reuben, who had performed the plan for the delivering him at the Dothan, added, Speak I not unto you, saying, Do not sin against the child, and you would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. For the Joseph, listening, should not control his emotions, and he went out and wept. On his return, he commanded that the Simeon be bound before them, and again committed to prison. And the cruel treatment of their brethren, Simeon had been the instigator and chief actor, and it was for this reason that the choice fell upon him. Before permitting his brothers to depart, Joseph gave direction that they should be supplied with the grain, and also that each mother should be secretly placed in the mouth of his sack. Provender for the days on the homeward journey was also supplied. On the way, one of the company opening his sack was surprised to find his bag of silver. On his making known the fact and to the others, they were alarmed and perplexed, and said one to another, What is this that the Yahweh has done unto us? Should they regard it as a token of good from the Yahweh, or has he suffered it to occur to punish them for their sins and plunge them still deeper into affliction? For they acknowledge that the Yahweh has seen their sin, and that he was now punishing them. Jacob was anxiously awaiting the return of his son, and on their arrival, the whole encampment gathered eagerly around them as they related unto their father all that had occurred. Alarm and apprehension filled every heart, for the conduct of the Egyptian governors seemed which implies some evil design, and their fears that were confirmed. But as they opened their sack, the owner's money was found in each, and his distress to each father's friend. You have exclaimed, me have you bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, Simeon is not, and you will take Benjamin away. All these things are against me. Reuben answered, slay my two sons, if I bring him not to thee. Deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him to thee again. This rash speech did not relieve the mind of Jacob. His answer was, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If mischief befall him by the way in which you go, then shall you bring down my gray hairs with sorrow unto the grave. But the drought continued, and in the process of time the supply of grain that had been brought from Egypt was nearly exhausted, for the sons of Joseph well knew that it would be in vain to return to Egypt without Benjamin, for they had little hope of changing their father's resolution, and they awaited the issue in silence. Deeper and deeper grew the shadow of the approaching famine, and the anxious faces of all in the encampment. The old man read their need. At last he said, go again. Buy us a little food. Judah answered, the man did solemnly protest and this, saying, you shall not see my face except your brother be with you. If thou wilt send our brother with us, we will go down and buy the food. But if thou wilt not send him, we will not go down. For the man said unto this, you shall not see my face except your brother be with you. Seeing that his father's resolution began to waver, he added, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and thou, and also our little ones. And he offered to be surety for his brother, and to bear the blame forever if he failed to restore Benjamin to his father. For Jacob could no longer withhold his consent, and he directed his sons to prepare for the journey. He bade them also take to the ruler a present of such things as a famine-wasted country afforded, a little balm and a little honey, spices and myrrh, nuts and almonds, also a double quantity of money. Take also your brother, he said, and arise, go again unto the man. As his sons were about to depart on their doubtful journey, the aged father arose and raised his hands to heaven, uttered the prayer, Yahweh Almighty, give you mercy before the man, that he may send away your other brother and Benjamin. If I be bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. Again, they journeyed to Egypt and presented themselves before Joseph. As his eye fell upon Benjamin, his own mother's son, he was deeply moved for he concealed his emotion, however, but ordered that they be taken to his house, and that the preparation be made for them to dine with him. Upon the being conducted to the governor's palace, the brothers were greatly alarmed, fearing that they were to be called to account for the money found in their sacks, for they thought that it might have been intentionally placed there to furnish occasion for the making them slaves. In their distress, they consulted with the steward of the house, relating unto him the circumstances of their visit to Egypt, and in the proof of their innocence informed him that they had brought back the money found in their sacks, also other money to buy food, and they added, "We cannot tell who put our money in our sacks." The man replied, "Peace be unto you. Fear not, your Yahweh and the Yahweh of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money." Their anxiety was relieved, and when Simon, who had been released from prison, joined them, they felt that Yahweh was indeed gracious unto them. This strange investor, this hour, contact us at 11th hour, calling at number 11, click on our audio archive, we're going to close now with this song.